So we are up to Perek Yudalid, chapter 14. We have started the Perek already, so we'll just try to catch everyone up. Shmuel Aleph, yeah. Perek Yudalid. So the beginning of this Perek, disgusting episode with Shmuel and Shaul, which we're not going to really focus on. Basically, Shmuel had told Shaul that he's supposed to wait for him before bringing certain karbanos, and he didn't. And Shmuel says, you know, that's not good, and that's sort of going to be the beginning of the end of your malchus, that you can't follow instructions. But we've discussed that already at length. Then the next part of the perek, basically, really the setting that's important for that situation is the Yonasan, the son of Shaul, had killed a certain Plishti officer. And now the Plishtim, the Philistines, were very angry about this, and they gathered a tremendous army against the Jewish people. And it was described, the numbers were pretty significant. Yeah, the numbers were 30,000 chariots, 6,000 cavalry, and infantry like sand on the side on the edge of the sea. So a lot of Plishtim were gathered against the Jewish people. It's also important to note that the Plishtim are basically in control, in general control of the Jewish people right now, of Israel. There, it seems that there's some autonomy. There are, you know, armies or militias or maybe some independence in different places in Israel. But in general, the Plishtim are in control. So we are going to start from the middle of the Perek, and we're going to start from Pasuk. Sorry, my mistake. That was all from Perek Yud Gimel. We started Perek Yud Dalet last week, and we are going to start from, in Perek Yud Dalet, Pasuk Vav, verse 6, in Perek Yud Dalet. So here, what's happened is that Yonasan has decided to, again, the son of Shaul, has decided to go out, you know, on some kind of scouting mission with just his arms bearer, and they didn't tell anyone they were going anywhere. And thank you. And the setting, the terrain here is basically the Plishtim are encamped on one mountainous area. There's a valley in between, and the Jewish people, Shaul and his small army of just 600 people, are encamped on the other mountain. And Yonasan and his arms bearer are trying to approach the Plishtim, and it's a very difficult terrain. It's very smooth and rocky, and that's what they're trying to do. So, let's read from Pasuk Vav, verse 6. Vayomer Yonasan el Hanar, Nosei Kelav. And Yonasan said to the lad, his arms bearer, L'cha v'nabra el matzav ha'arelim ha'ileh. Let's go and pass to this group of arelim, of uncircumcised Plishtim. Ula yasa Hashem lanu. Maybe Hashem will do something great for us. Ki ein la Hashem matzor lehoshia b'rav v'mat. Because there's nothing stopping Hashem from saving, whether we're few or we're many, whether we're many or we're few. So Yonasan is really just demonstrating tremendous bitachon here, tremendous trust in God, and he's saying, you know, for Hashem, what's the difference? If one, two people, one person against an army, or if it's a big army, to Hashem it makes no difference. So let's go and see. Maybe Hashem will act on our behalf. And his arms bearer said, do whatever is in your heart. Neteilach, you could go in that direction. I'll be with you with whatever your heart desires. Vayomer Yehonasan, and Yehonasan said, Hinei anachnu ovrim el ha'anashim, we are going to pass towards these men, v'nigrinu alehem, and let us reveal ourselves to them. So here we're dealing with a small group of Pushtim. It seems it was about 20 men that had advanced, that was also scouting or something, and you have two people, Yonasan and Shaul, and his arms bearer, and they're approaching. And then Yonasan says something fascinating. He says in Pasuk Tes, Imko Yomru Eleinu, if they say the following, Domo Ad Hagienu Alechem, if they say, wait until we come to you, if when the Plishtim spot us, they say, wait where you are, V'amdenu Tachdenu V'lona Alechem, then we will stay, and we won't go up to them, and we're not going to fight them, it seems his intention is. V'imko Yomru, and if they say, Alu Alenu, that come up to us, come, the Alinu, then we will go up, Ki Nisanam Hashem B'yadeinu, because that would mean that Hashem has given them over into our hands, V'zelanu Ha'os, and that will be a sign. And indeed, we read last week, the Plishtim do respond, and they say, come, and that Yonasan sees as a sign that Hashem, you know, is giving them over into his hands. And indeed, they approach, and in Pasuk Yud Dalet, we read, and the first striking that they made, Yonasan and his lad, was about 20 men. And these people were not spread out. They were, the Pasuk describes, this is some kind of furrow in the field, that it's just describing how far apart the people were. And the point is that he wasn't, you know, getting one plishti here and one plishti another 200 feet and then another one, which wouldn't be so miraculous. The point is that these plishtim were in a close area where they could come to each other's defense. And still, Yonasan and his arms bearer, after, by the way, the Pasuk described how they had to like climb a rock to get there, after approaching through a precipitous, I don't know if that's the right word, but approach, they still then killed off 20 Plishtim. So a great miraculous victory. So we began to discuss last week the validity of such an approach. Yonasan says, if they say, you know, stay where you are, so then we're not going to fight them. But if they say, come up to us, then we'll see that as a sign, an omen from God, and we're going to go and fight them. So the question is, are we allowed to do this? Is someone allowed to do that on their own? Can a person say, if so-and-so happens? So we'll see that it's not so simple, and it's going to be a machlokes among the poskim, and then we'll have to discuss why it was permitted for Yonasan to do it. So it really starts with the pasuk in the Torah. The Torah says, "Lo sinachashu," which means don't divine, don't through omens, don't interpret omens, something like that. Not clear on its own what it means. But there's a brisa in Maseches Sanhedrin, and the brisa gives a number of examples. The brisa says, "Tanu Rabbana," and the rabbis taught, "What's menachesh? What is this act of divining?" Divining is ha'omer pito nafla mipiv, a guy drops his bread from his mouth. He says, oh, it's going to be a bad day. Or he drops his stick. He says, oh, that's an omen. Today's going to be a bad day. Different examples. The brisa gives, a deer runs across his path, you know, very relevant to Kemp Mill. You know, a deer runs across your path. So you say, oh, you know, I don't know, he doesn't even say what that sign would be. Or you see a snake, or whatever it is, different things, and you say, oh, this is an omen.
Stock in the stock market.
Right, exactly.
Okay, but those examples are irrational connections. This, for all we know, could be a rational connection. You may know something about the psychology of the police team, or the military situation and make this a rational inference.
Excellent, excellent. Yeah, very important. We're going to see that. Yeah, there are mafarshim are going to bring that in. So, right, so as of now, there doesn't seem to be a connection. Even in general, it's a different thing. Over there, you're like reading an omen, right? Something that, here, it's very different. Here you're saying, if this happens, if God does this, then this, you know? Over there, it was like, besides for that, it was irrational. It was also just something that already happened, right? It wasn't something you say, oh, if God does this, right? It would be one thing to say, if a deer will cross my path, I'll see that as a sign from God that so-and-so, that's already different to me from what the Brisa is describing. However, there's another Gemara. The Gemara is in Chulin. Gemara says it's actually talking about the halachos related to meat and how it has to be, you can't leave meat unattended. Basar shenis'ale min ha'ayin. And the Gemara gives the following story. It says, Rav, one of the great Amorayim, was traveling to visit his son-in-law. And the ferry came right away. And Rav said, the Gemara says, Yoma Tava Legav. It's going to be a good day. So if the ferry comes on time, Rav says, today's a good day. Okay. So he goes, he travels to his son-in-law's house, and he gets there, and like any good father-in-law, he peeks through a crack in the door before he goes in to see what's going on. Right? You do that, right? No. So what does he see? So, you know, nothing too exciting, but he sees that there's some meat hanging there, which is fine, no problem, because everyone's inside. So he knocks on the door, the Gemara says, and everyone comes to the door, and nobody has their eyes on the meat. So I don't know if the situation was that there were non-Jewish workers inside. Also, it seems there was a concern of Basar Shnei Salam Ayin. However, Rav was very careful. Rav did not take his eyes off of it. He kept looking at the meat to make sure it didn't get switched up or anything. But everyone else took their eyes off of it. So Rav wasn't so happy with his son-in-law's kashrus. Even though, you know, Rav was being the mashkiach right now and watching the meat. But he said to his son-in-law, are you serving my grandchildren, you know, treif? So that was the story. Story goes on. It says that Rav would not eat the meat. So the Gemara wants to know, why not? If it's because of Basar Shnei Salam Ayin, because it was meat that was lost from sight, nobody was watching it. But it says that Rav was watching it the whole time. So that couldn't have been the concern. So then the Gemara says the following line. It says, Ella dinachish. So you'll tell me it's because of his nichush, his divining, his omen, which needs to be interpreted. Something happened that was assigned to him not to eat. Either it had to do with him catching the ferry on time, and he saw that today's a, you know, a good day, and somehow he understood, I'm not sure, it's not clear from the events, that means he shouldn't eat. Or just from the event, some of Arshim will say, just from the fact that everybody turned away, somehow that was an omen to him. Not so clear what the omen was, but that's the Gemara suggestion. But the Gemara says that can't be the problem. Because v'ha'amar Rav, because Rav himself taught, Ko nichesh she'eno ke'eliezer eved Avram, u'ke'yonasan ben Sha'ul, eino nichesh. Any divining, any omen reading, that's not like the reading of Eliezer, the servant of Avram, or like Yonasan, the son of Sha'ul, referring to our story, is not nichesh. This is the only thing that's called nichesh, the Gemara says.
So he's saying, if it's related, it's bad?
What?
Saying, if it's related, like in Eliezer, represented Amidos.
No, we'll have to get to that. That's going to be the... We'll have to explain that, yeah. So,
Rabbi, why couldn't he have just reasoned that, well, because they took their eyes off the meat, I don't trust the kashrut, that's why I won't eat it.
Interesting, yeah. Gemara doesn't seem to think that's the reason, but... So... Yeah,
really?
It's a good suggestion. That the Gemara's going to have another answer, finally, but it's not going to be that. So Eliezer, we're familiar, Eliezer, when he's traveling to find a wife for Yitzchak, so he says, it will be that the girl who brings me water, I'll see that as a sign that that's the right girl. So again, it's similar to Jonas' song. If this will happen, then I'll know that that's the right girl. And again, you'll say, and as Mr. Gadalowitz was saying, it's, you know, it seems also to be rational here. Okay, we'll get to that. But so that was what Eliezer did. And Jonas' song we have in R, he says, if the Plishtim say, approach, so then I'll know that I can fight them, and he does. So the Gemara says, anything that's not like these two events is not Nichush. So what was Rav's issue here? Why wouldn't he eat the meat? So the Gemara finally says, it's because, aside, totally different reason, he didn't, it was just Rav wouldn't eat from a Sudas Rishus. Rav didn't have optional meals, maybe meat, you know, maybe like we talked about last week, we mentioned because it was Parshas Kedoshim, that you're, you know, Kedoshim to you, that you're Poresh from Mostros, you separate from having extras, and, you know, Rav saved the meat for Shabbos and Yontif, for Sudas Mitzvah, perhaps. He wouldn't eat, you know, from an optional meal.
He was on a diet.
He was on a diet, yeah. Either a spiritual diet or a physical diet, whatever it was, but he wouldn't eat from a Sudas Rishus, and that's why he wouldn't eat the meat. Okay, but we have this very interesting line of the Gemara, any Nichush that's not like Eliezer or Yonasan is not Nichush, that's not divining. So, the Rambam interprets that line to mean that's a type of Nichush that is forbidden. When the Rambam paskins the halachos of lo sinachashu, of don't read omens, don't divine, the Rambam says, so he lists, first of all, the examples from the Bryce and Sanhedrin about, you know, you drop your bread, or a cat, or a deer crosses your path, or you see a snake, or different things. But then he goes on, and among the things included in lo sinachashu, the Rambam says, a person who makes signs for himself. If so and so, such and such an event happens, then I'm going to respond by doing B. If A happens, then I'll do B. But if A doesn't happen, I won't do it. Says the Rambam, like Eliezer, Ever Avram. Or anything similar to that, hakol aser. It's all aser. You're not allowed, set paskins the Rambam, to say, if A happens, I'll do B. Seemingly, you're not allowed to do what Eliezer and Yonasan did. If you just read the Rambam, then you might think that, right? So Tosfos on that Gemara clearly learned the same way as the Rambam. So he asked the question, so if it's forbidden, so how did Yonasan do it? Yonasan was this great tzaddik. So the Tosfos says, Yonasan didn't really mean it. Yonasan was just trying to be mezarez, to encourage his servant, to get his servant, his arms bearer, excited to do battle. It seems, by the way, from context, that Yonasan had some kind of Ruach HaKodesh come over him. Like, all of a sudden, he decides to... He says, oh, you know, Hashem could do, you know, great things. I could take on 20 people. Yonasan had, like, a sense of Ruach HaKodesh that this was the moment. But perhaps he had to excite, you know, get his arms bearer excited to get involved. And so he did this thing, but he didn't really mean it as a means of divining. But at the same time, the Gemara is using that as an example of what is a problem of divining. The Gemara is saying that for someone else to do that and really mean it, that would be a problem. That's how the Rambam and Tosfos would understand the Gemara and that reference to Yonasan.
Eliezer didn't really mean it.
Right, so we'll have to talk about Eliezer. We'll get back to Eliezer soon. Okay, good question. Okay, the Ravid, who writes glosses on the Rambam, argues, and, you know, whenever he has an argument, he takes it to the Rambam, he argues vehemently on the Rambam, and he says, Zeh Shibush Gadol. The Rambam is making a big mistake. This is permitted. A person is allowed to say, if A happens, I'll do B. He says, I think I know where the Rambam made a mistake. Why the Rambam was mistaken? It must have been from the Gemara that we read, because it says there, Kol niche sheino, any divining that's not like Eliezer and Yonasan is not divining. And he thought, says the Ravid, that the Gemara was saying that's usser. But that's not what it meant. Elahachi kamar, eino ro'oi lismoch. It's not fitting to rely on it. The Gemara wasn't saying, the Gemara is not talking, says the Ravid, about the type of nichosh that's forbidden. That's a brisa in Sanhedrin. That talks about what's forbidden. The Gemara was talking about a type of divining that's permitted. But it was saying, telling you what kind of divining is reliable. And the Gemara was saying that if Rav was relying on some sort of divination of reading an omen, well, says the Gemara, can't be, because Rav himself said, Rav knows that the only types of omens that are reliable, kol nichesh, that's not like, any nichesh that's not like what Eliezer did and what Yonasan did, is not nichesh, it's not reliable. So obviously that's not what Rav was relying on. But the Gemara is not saying that it's forbidden. It's actually telling you it's permitted, but it's telling you, you know, which kind to rely on. Rav was reading omens. That's not the type of nichosh that's reliable. And the Ravid throws in, and how could the Rambam, Eichashavat Tzadikim Kamosam Averazu, how could he think that these Tzadikim did this Avera? Right, we said Tosos, we gave an answer for that. But the Ravid, if you read the Rambam doesn't give an answer for that. We gave so far for Tosos, for Yonasan. We didn't give for Eliezer yet, but we will. So that's the approach of the Ravid. And the truth is that that's how the Radak in his Perush on our Navi also explains. The Radak brings in this Gemara, and he says, don't be mistaken by what it says in Chazal, that any nichush that's not like Eliezer and like Yonasan is not nichush. The Ravid also says that that it's not as many understand. It's not like the Rambam understood it, that it's an isser. Rather, it's permitted. And he says it's that he reads the Navi and the Gemara just like the Ravid, that it's a reliable form of divining. And he says, he sort of has his proof is that it worked. He says, "Im yirtze adam lasos maisa." If a person wants to do something, he's not sure. Let's say he wants to make some kind of sign that it's the right thing to do. To strengthen his heart, and to awaken himself to do this action. That's permitted. Had it been a problem what Eliezer and Yonasan were doing, Hashem wouldn't have given them a good answer and given it over to them and helped them. So you see, it must have been proper, and the person's allowed to do that. They want to strengthen they want to be sure that it's the right thing. They could say, you know, Hashem, give me a sign that I'm making the right choice. The Radak. No, they were answered Shaloka.
Who's that? Chaim is going to mention
that. Right.
What he's going to sacrifice, if that's what he meant.
Yeah, his daughter came. So
he didn't know what he was going to sacrifice. The goat coming down the hill, he was going to sacrifice a goat. That was the sign of whatever came down.
Right, so he was answered Shaloka. Yeah,
but the question was the same question like Eliezer. Eliezer was absolutely exclusive. He said the same thing. Whoever comes out would be my... It could have been a sick person that came out. So I think it says that
it says Eliezer in that Gemara, you're saying, that he was also one of the Shaloka Hogan.
Yeah, but and he was answered Kahogan.
And he was answered Kahogan.
Because anybody could have come out, a sick person could come out.
Right, that's what Gemara says, right. Yeah, so that's probably going to come back to part of why we justify what Eliezer did, which is that there was a rational thinking to it. Of she had good midos, you know, it wasn't just whoever is the first to come out, it was whoever brings me water. So we'll, yeah. I think that if the Gemara doesn't say the Mefarshim on that Gemara, I think say it.
It's not really divining, though. It's just sort of, I don't know, sort of ascertaining from the rational facts.
Right, right. So that would be more in line with the, with just, with that it's normally forbidden, and this is why it was permitted over there. That's where we would bring in those ideas more.
Right. I was going to ask about Yiftach. I mean, was that considered divining, or is it just being
No, I don't think that's divining. That's just saying whoever, what Yiftach did was, he said, whoever, the first one to walk through my door, I'll bring as a carbon. Whatever comes through my door, I'll bring as a carbon. And it was his daughter. So that was, you know. Right, but he's not divining it. I don't think that's divining. That's just whatever comes. It's not saying if this, then that, or saying that, or reading an omen, or.
It's a statement of his own intent.
Right, whatever happens, happens.
He's not divining something else.
Right. Right, it's self-fulfilling. Whatever comes through will be the one that I bring.
It'd be like if you're saying, if a goat comes out, then I'll do this. If a sheep comes out, I'll do this.
Apparently, it's whoever brings the water.
No, but that it was directly related. It was the bringing the water to the temple. That was like a vidot tub. So it was a show that you're going to bring the water and have good vidot. But that wasn't vidot.
Okay, so in terms of the one approach is the Ravid and the Radak who say that it's what they did was permitted, and a person is allowed to say, you know, if A happens, then I'll do B. But if A doesn't happen, then I won't do B. That's the Ravid and the Radak. But the Rambam paskin that it's usher. So we asked the question already, saying how could Eliezer and Yonasan have done it? So we mentioned Tosfos says, at least for Yonasan, that he was just trying to be Mizares to encourage his arms bearer. The other approach is what others have been mentioning here, which is what the Ran says, which is that the Ran, the Kesef Mishnah, brings it down that I'll just tell you how he says it. He says the nichesh sha'asra Torah, the nichesh that the Torah forbids, is hatola es ma'ase b'simin she'ing hasvara no senes she'igarim to'alus l'davar onezek. Like you said, if there's no rational connection to what's going to take place, or what you want to do, kigong pito nafla miyado, or you drop your bread. That's one of the examples. It's not no bearing whatsoever on anything else that's going to happen that day. You know, don't invest in the stock market today because you dropped your bread. That doesn't, there's no rational connection. However, if there is a connection, so then it's okay. So like we've been saying, the Ran speaks this out, that by Eliezer, so the examples that he gave, the examples that he gave were, if she brings water, then she's a good, then it'll be a sign that she should be a wife for Yitzchak. So obviously, if she brings water, she's a balas midos and balas chesed, and that's someone who's befitting for a wife. And the same thing over here, the way that he says it, is that I think he understands it that the reaction of the Plishtim, whether to say come or to say stay where you are, would demonstrate their confidence in their position. The Ran says that Yonasan felt that if they tell me to come out, to come forward, that means they don't want to approach me. They're afraid of an ambush. They're nervous about something. If they would say, stay where you are, we're going to come to you, that would show that they're not nervous about anything. They don't think there's an ambush. They're very confident they're going to walk to us. But if they say, come to me, you come to us, you know, sort of come out with your hands up, so that would show that they're not feeling so confident. They're feeling a little bit nervous. There's a little bit of fear in their hearts, and he says that once somebody's afraid, so then, and even a small group of people who are confident and strong can overcome a much larger group of people who are fearful and nervous. And so there was a strategy here that Yonasan was employing along with his nichush. So that's why it was okay for him, but for someone to do something that's completely unrelated, to make conditions that are completely unrelated to what you want to do, that, according to the Kesef Mishnah, even in explaining the Rambam, is what would be a problem. Very interestingly, in the Halacha, in the Darkei Moshe, he actually quotes the Radak in Navi, which is, you know, not so common that you have that. I just thought that was fascinating, right? Usually you have halachic works and you have mefarshim, and there's a halachic process, and in the works of halacha, you know, they'll quote the Rambam is a halachic work, the Ravid, but the Radak is a commentary on Navi. But the Darkei Moshe, or Moshe Israelis, in his commentary on Beis Yosef, which is the predecessor to the Rama and the Shulchan Aruch, the Rama in his Darkei Moshe, so he actually, the Beis Yosef quoted the Rambam that this kind of divining is forbidden. The Darkei Moshe says, but Rav David Kimchi, the Radak, in his Peirush to Shmuel Aleph, argues on the Rambam. And he carries this down to the Shulchan Aruch. And in the Shulchan Aruch, the Rambam writes that there are those who say, Yesh Omrim, that it's mutter lasos lo simen bedavar sheyavo laasid, that it's permitted for somebody to make a sign for something that's going to come in the future. Kmo sha'asa Eliezer eved Avram o Yonasan, like Eliezer and Yonasan did. That's the Radak, the Yesh Osrin, he says, and there are those who forbid it, the Rambam. The aholich betum betom ubotech b'Hashem chesed yisovavenu. Says the Rama, he concludes, a person who walks in purity and is botech b'Hashem and relies on Hashem, chesed yisovavenu, Hashem's chesed will surround him. Basically, he's saying, if you can avoid it, just avoid it. Just rely on Hashem. Rely on Hashem. Have bitachon. You don't need to do these divining signs, and that's really the best approach, according to the Rama. But he brings both opinions, and but he comes out that it's probably best to avoid. Just one more note on this topic. The Abarbanel, I think the Malba maybe learns this way also, they point out that in this situation, Yonasan, he wasn't really only giving two options. He said, if they say come up, so then I'll come. And if they say, then I'll see that as a sign to attack. If they say stay, then I'll see that as a sign to stay, that I shouldn't attack. But they could have said many other things. They could have said nothing. They could have said, they could have used different language. You know, approach, come, different words in Hebrew. But they used the exact words of Lashon HaKodesh that Yonasan used. So the Abarbanel says that's what he saw as the sign from Hashem, that Hashem was sending his Ashkacha, that there were maybe 10 things that they could have said. It's a 10% chance that they say exactly the words that I've chosen, that was the sign that Yonasan was looking for, and indeed they said exactly his words, and according to the Abarbanel and the Malbim, that's what he saw as the sign that it was okay to approach. Yeah.
The language that the Armist Bearer used twice, in what is in your heart, the kind of language that would be used to indicate that there might be some prophecy involved?
I think so. Or at least the way that he said it, like, I'll do whatever you say. I think some Mefarshim say that he understood that there was something... there was something going on here. I mean, just from context almost, that, like I said, Yonasan all of a sudden decides he's going to attack. So the arms bearer, I think, understood that there was some kind of Ruach HaKodesh taking place.
The saying of whatever you say.
Right. Interesting. Okay. Okay, so let's read a little bit further. We're going to go from now, Pasuk Tes Vav, verse 15. Batehi charada b'machaneh basadeh u'bechol ha'am. And there was trembling in the camp, in the field, and in the entire nation. Hamatzav v'hamashchis chardu gam hema. These were different parts of the Plishti attackers. We had the scouting group, and the mashchis was the destroyers, other bands. And chardu gam hema, they all trembled. Vatirgaz ha'aretz, and the land trembled. That's not meant to be taken literally. Vatehi l'cherdas elokim. The Navi testifies this was a trembling that was brought about by Hashem, that Hashem now instilled in the Plishti camp great fear, and everybody was all of a sudden, you know, super fearful and afraid, and really started to go crazy, as we'll see. Vayiru atofim l'shal b'givas binyamin, and the lookouts for Shaul who were in Givas Binyamin, on the hill of Binyamin, where the armies of Shaul were situated. So they saw, Binei Hehamon Namog. The Hamon, the masses. This is an expression the Malbim says of an unorganized mass. Yeah, they're no longer unified. They're not an aguda, they're not a machane, they're now a hamon, which is like a mass, is just unorganized. This is the plishtim. Namog, they were stricken with something, and they were wandering, different farshim say. And vayelech vahalom, and they went around, and they were stricken. Vayomer Shaul ra'am asher ito, and Shaul said to the nation that was with him, Piktu na uru'u miholach me'imanu. Let's do a count of our group, and let's see who left us, who is no longer with us. Vayifkadu, and they counted everyone, v'nei en Yonasang v'nosei chelav, and behold, Yonasang and his arms bearer were not with them. Seems, I guess, that Shaul, you know, all of a sudden the Plishti camps were in an uproar and going crazy. He thought maybe something had happened, someone had left us, someone had gone and done something, and he was right. Yonasan and his arms bearer were no longer with him. Batehi charada b'machane basadeh u'vechol ha'am hamatzav v'hamashchis. And there was trembling in the camp, in the field, in the whole nation of the Plishtim. Sorry, I went backwards here. Sorry, that was the wrong pasuk. I'm supposed to be in pasuk Yudches. Vayomer Shaul Achia, and Shaul said to Achia, who was the Kohen Gadol, Hagisha Aron HaElokim, bring forth the Aron, Ki Aya Aron HaElokim Bayomahu Uvnei Yisrael. And because the Aron was on that day with them, with Bnei Yisrael. That, it seems, the Malbim says, the Aron didn't really have a home right now. Shiloh had been destroyed. Some of Farshim, I think, understand that Nov was now the place of the Mishkan, and I would have thought the Aron was there normally. Could be they had the Aron out with them for war. The Malbim says that the Aron didn't really have a home, and they would take it with them wherever they had a big gathering of Jews. And the king is here, the Kohen Gadol's here. So that's why they had it there. But the intent was that they were going to ask, it seems, the Urim Betumim, the Kohen Gadol's breastplate, which could tell them what to do in war. They were going to ask the Urim Betumim and decide what the next step should be. Vayhi adiber Shaul el haKohen, but it was before Shaul had a chance to speak to the Kohen and the Urim Betumim. Ve'ahamon asher b'machaneh plishtim, vayelech haloch varav. the masses in the camp of Plishtim was going and growing greater, was increasing, maybe it was getting more riled up, and Shaul got nervous. Vayomer Shaul el ha-kohen, esof yadecha. And Shaul said to the kohen, gathering your hands, we don't have time to ask Urim Betumim what to do, we're just going to have to act on our own. Chazal and Amr of Midrashim take Shaul to task for this. Again, we see a lack of patience, perhaps, bowing to pressure, and the proper action here should have been to ask the Urim Betumim how best to proceed. Vayizayik Shaul v'chol ha'am asher ito, and Shaul and the whole nation that was with him gathered together. Vayavo ad ha'milchama, and they came to the battle. V'nei ha'isacherev ish bireyehu, and behold, the sword of each man was in his friend. The Plishtim were fighting each other. They were overcome with fear and some lack of clarity and just panic, and they were now fighting each other. Mehuma gedola me'od. There was a great confusion that passed over them. Ivrim hayu leplishtim ketmol shilsham. Now the Navi tells us something very fascinating. There were Ivrim, there were Jews who had been fighting on the side of the Plishtim. Ketmol shilsham, the yesterday and the day before, meaning previously. Either they were afraid and therefore they fought alongside the Plishtim. That's how Rashi says it. Other Mefarshim say that they lived in Plishti lands and they were forced to fight for them, maybe at the risk of their families, you know, their homes, you know, their families back home, you know, under threat of death if you don't fight on our behalf. But at this point, the pasuk says those Jews asher olu ima mamachanes aviv, who had gone up with them and were around the camp. Some learn they were around the camp means that they didn't fight, but they just serviced. They had, you know, they didn't. It kind of makes sense. They weren't armed necessarily, but they were the food servers for the Plishti camps. But they were there. V'gamhema lios im Yisrael. But now they joined sides with Israel. Asher im Shaul v'Yonasan, along with Shaul and Yonasan. Because, says the Radak, they no longer, even if you understand that they were afraid, they were fearful for their families, but at this point they had nothing to fear. Because all the Plishtim were killing each other also. Because everyone was in a, you know, there was this great upheaval. So they no longer had to fear. Nobody would know, you know, if they turned coat and fought the Plishtim. The Plishtim themselves were fighting the Plishtim. So they were able to turn and join the side of the Jewish people again. The Chol Ish Yisrael, HaMischabim B'har Ephraim Shamu. If you recall, we learned that when the Plishtim first gathered together, so some Jews fled to across the Yarden, some Jews went into hiding. So the Navi says those Jews who had gone into hiding, they heard Kinasu Plishtim. They heard that the Plishtim were running away. Vayidbeku gam hema acharem b'melchama. So they said, "Oh, you know, we're winning. Let's go." You know, they joined they jumped on the bandwagon and they came out of hiding, and they joined the Jewish forces. Vayosha Hashem b'yom ahu es Yisrael, and Hashem saved on that day the Jewish people. The milchama avra es base oven, and the battle passed all the way to base oven. And I think, see, yeah, I think we're gonna hold right there because the next part is gonna be a sort of a new topic, another exciting topic in this parak. So
we have to wait 3 weeks to see what happens.
Yeah, we'll have to wait 3 weeks. So just to close up, yeah, so we leave off that that there's a tremendous, you know, infighting going on within the Plishtim. There's a miraculous situation. Hashem sends fear and trembling into them. They turn on each other, and now the Jewish people are gathering, really banding together. People who previously were not fighting on their behalf, there's really a uniting of the Jewish people to fight against the Plishtim. And we'll have to see next time what's going to happen next.
This is before, but tear gas or so that means an earthquake or...